This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit is brought to you by Bluehost. It's now easier and cheaper than ever before to start your own blog or website. For just $6.95 per month, you get unlimited hosting, one-click installation of WordPress, a .com domain name, and much more. Go to sqpn.com/bluehost for more information. And by the Amazon store. Click on the link on our website before you shop at Amazon, and your purchase will help support our show.
sqpn.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Now, where to begin?
Welcome back to a new episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit. And he is back again from wherever he was. Dave Kill, how are you?
I've returned from my journey.
That sounds as if you were in Middle Earth and you just visited Dol Guldur and came back.
No, fortunately, it wasn't like that at all. I actually went to Hawaii for a couple of weeks. So
I think that's nicer than Dol Guldur, actually.
No, accommodations were a little bit better.
Very good. Well, I'm excited to have you back on the show because I had to bluff my way through The Hobbit for several weeks now. And it's good to have an expert on the show. After all, that's why people listen to this particular podcast. It's not to hear me, but to hear you.
Oh, I don't know. I think people enjoy listening to you bluff also.
Yeah, perhaps, yes. Well, we had a great time analyzing the production video in the last two episodes, trying to second guess what actually we were looking at and what they were filming in all these different locations. Were you able to see the production video?
Yeah, I actually just watched it last night. I haven't gotten to listen to the episode yet, but I'm going to because I want to see what secrets you guys unearthed from the video.
So what was your overall impression of this sixth production
video? Well, I was impressed, and this is why I want to listen to your episode, because I was impressed how, at least on one sort of cursory viewing, I was impressed by how little information they managed to convey. I was like, well, it's a lot of beautiful locations, but, you know, I have no idea what, like, where any of these scenes belong until the very end with the river and the barrels. It's like, oh, I know what that is.
That was pretty obvious, yes. No, I actually just by puzzling and by trying to think logically, we were able to distill quite a bit of information, I think, that they might not have wanted to give away, including, I think, where the movies will split. I think that we nailed that one. I'm pretty convinced that we found exactly the moment where it will split. And it was like I predicted a few weeks ago, it's going to be probably when the barrels arrive at the end of their journey through the forest, and then, you know, just before we get to Lake Town. That's, I think, what's going to be the end of the first movie.
Interesting. I definitely need to listen to this episode. That question's looming big in the riddles in the dark prediction game that Corey Olson and Mythgard are doing. And we're talking earlier this week and we're like, we probably better get our butts in gear and make a prediction on that before too much information is released and it's spoiled.
Well, yes, I think that we have more or less proof now that that's where the movie is going to split. But people that missed those last two episodes, they'll have to go back and re-listen to them to find out why I think the barrel scene is where the movie will split. You can re-listen to those episodes at thehobbit.sqpn.com. But right now, let's dive into this week's news, or actually it's the news from the past 2 weeks that we weren't able to cover before. And so here it comes.
You're done. Confounded old Samwise Gamgee! Have you been eavesdropping?
I haven't been dropping no eaves, sir, honest.
What did you hear? Speak!
Nothing important. Please, Mr. Gandalf, sir, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me in anything unnatural.
Well, just looking at the production video, I got very excited about the quality of what we'll see in The Hobbit, just the vistas and the fantastic landscape. I think it's going to be epic. And I'm in good company, I think, because even one of the main actors, or at least one of the more interesting actors who is going to feature in this in these two movies, is also agrees that The Hobbit will probably be amazing. And we're talking, of course, about Benedict Cumberbatch. Now, he talked to MTV, right?
Yep, that's what I found. It was a couple weeks ago, I think February 29th-ish. There's an article about it where they discuss it on Middle Earth News. And then also, if you go to mtv.com, you can find a video interview with him, I believe.
Oh,
and I think
good.
That's where the source of it is.
Fantastic.
Yes. Sorry, I didn't include that link, but I'll drop it into your Skype window in case you want to play some audio from it.
We might be able to play a little bit of it.
Mm-hmm. But basically, I'm not sure. I'm trying to figure out where it was that they were interviewing him.
Could this be the interview in which he talks about doing the motion capture and stuff? And strangely enough, in one of the interviews, and I think it might be this one or it might be another one around the same time, he did confirm that he did motion capture and the voice for Smaug. And then he said, and some other yet-to-be-revealed character, which, of course, is the Necromancer. And I was like, why would he not just say that it was the Necromancer?
I don't know, because I'm pretty sure that he's all but confirmed it in previous interviews. There was one from like a month and a half ago, something about playing... I'm pretty sure he specifically said the Necromancer, and he mentioned something about being at the Battle of Five Armies, and it set off a firestorm on the internet.
Yeah, because he was a bit fuzzy on the details there.
Yes. Let's see, that was in Empire.
Okay, I've got the video lined up here,
right.
So we can...
You go ahead, I'm going to revisit the old article.
This is a very, very short video clip.
I was very lucky with Peter. Well, it is a bit, yes, but I mean, I can at least say, as far as the experience, what an extraordinary one it was, because at the time I was doing my work, it was me in isolation with him and this incredible tech team at the very coalface of that technology doing mocap for two characters, motion capture for the Smaug, the dragon, and another character which will remain nameless. And it was an awful lot of fun. They all started arriving when I finished my stuff, so that was great. I got to meet an awful lot of the doors, and Martin obviously came out, which was great, and I got to hang out with him. And I kept a straight face for a bit, and then I started giggling, because I know Martin, I don't know Bilbo. And for Martin to be sitting there as Bilbo, it's just amazing. He's gonna be amazing. He's gonna be fantastic in this role.
Sorry about the audio quality there. This was recorded in a very loud environment, so... It's kind of hard to understand what he said, but one thing that I don't think I mentioned before is that he is very excited to see Martin Freeman as Bilbo, and how weird that was, because of course the two of them have been playing together in Sherlock, where Martin Freeman's character is very different. I suppose Benedict Cumberbatch's character is also very different from Smaug in Sherlock, and just to have the same actors in this in on a set. Playing totally different characters. That must have been a hoot. I wish we could see that.
Yes. Yeah. I'm really excited to see the chemistry between them on screen when he's playing Smaug and Martin Freeman has snuck into the Lonely Mountain and down into the chambers where Smaug's sleeping. I think that's going to be awesome.
Although, technically spoken, he seems to imply that he did most of the motion capture with the dragon alone with Peter Jackson and in this very technical environment. So, I gather that he only met Martin Freeman later on.
Yeah.
So I'm not even sure if the two of them are going to be acting together in the same scene.
I find that a little disappointing. I'm kind of hoping that maybe there's still more to shoot and that they will actually do like the dialogue from the scene together or something. Because that was one of the things I've been anticipating more than anything, the chemistry between them. Because they're awesome on Sherlock. So I'm optimistic that maybe they still have something else to shoot or something.
Could be, but it'll work anyway. And yeah. I mean, we're still pretty early in the process because most of the Smaug scenes are going to be in the second movie. And so they will have plenty of time for pickup shoots and even tweaking of the script if they feel that, well, there is chemistry that could benefit the overall narrative of the second movie. So, yeah, I have no doubt that they will... try to squeeze every drop of creativity out of these two, because otherwise, why would you have them in the movie?
Yes. So I found the older interview, which I'm sure we talked about mm-hmm. a month or two ago. It's back from early January in Empire. It's on EmpireOnline.com, and in it, he says specifically, "I'm playing Smaug through motion capture and voicing the Necromancer, which is a character in the Five Legions War or something, which I'm meant to understand." Hmm. It's kind of weird that he says character remains nameless, and I'm sure that there's at least several people out there on the internet who are claiming that that this is a third character he's playing.
Gosh. Maybe. that sounds a bit improbable to me. What I can't imagine is that nobody knows exactly what the Necromancer will look like, mm-hmm. And so that in that respect, and they might even call him differently, or he might have different names. Perhaps, I don't know. The Necromancer is the only name we know, but of course it's Sauron, and so
yes,
perhaps he's referring to that we still, you know, the name, the true identity of the Necromancer still has to be revealed. Could be
yeah,
that.
Hasn't been revealed. Yeah, I think
something like that.
That's probably a good. I'm guessing you're probably right. Also, the Empire article gives you the impression that he's not terribly familiar with the books, mm-hmm. so it could be that he you know thinks that he's being coy, and that while he revealed it in the previous interview, he's being coy in this interview, and maybe thinks that people won't know what he's talking about. little does he know that the Hobbit mania on the internet, we all know exactly what he's talking about.
Exactly, we'll reflect and discuss every word he says in every interview.
That's
now,
right.
He also seems to imply that the Necromancer is also going to be done with motion capture mm-hmm. in this blurb. But do we have any description of the Necromancer by Tolkien himself in the lore? Nothing.
Nope. And we were wondering, I think we talked about this a long time ago, mm-hmm. 4 or 5 months back in the fall, about what the Necromancer might sort of physically end up being like, you know, if he, because somebody is playing him, so we know he's going to show up. Mm-hmm. And so there's a very interesting question about how he will show up, because while he is mentioned, in The Hobbit and he's expanded on in some of the additional material in Gandalf's narrative in The Lord of the Rings, at the Council of Elrond, there's no one ever describes an encounter with him mm-hmm. or a conversation with him or a battle or anything. All we know is that Gandalf sneaks into Dol Guldur and discovers that the Necromancer is indeed Sauron, but he never says how. I think we joked about, you know, Gandalf running or coming around a corner and running into him or something like that. Oh, it's you. So I don't think we really have a good notion about how he will be portrayed on screen. I think I don't think he's going to be the burning eyeball.
That was another thing I was wondering is, does Tolkien talk about the kind of the evolution of the Necromancer into Sauron, or, you know, this whole flaming eye business? Is there anything yes. that goes from one stage to another? Because I'm really not up to date on the backstory of Sauron. Just that he's pretty evil.
In the Hobbit itself, he doesn't talk. He doesn't spend a lot of time talking about the physicality of Sauron. Mm-hmm. In The Lord of the Rings itself, he talks a lot more about it in the Silmarillion, and particularly in the Akalabeth. He points out that after the fall of Numenor. During the fall of Numenor, his physical body that he is inhabiting at that point is destroyed.
Oh.
And ever thereafter, he is unable to take a form that is pleasing to the mortal eye. So he has this persona following between the end of the First Age and the sort of huge battle that overthrows his master, Morgoth, Between then and the Third Age, you know, where he pops up in the Lord of the Rings, he has this persona. His name's Annatar, Lord of Gifts, and this is when he first tricks the elves into making rings and betrays them, and then this is also when he goes and has a brief stay in Numenor and corrupts the Numenorians, and he's able to assume a form that is pleasing to the eye of these sort of lesser characters, elves and men, and after Numenor falls, he loses this ability. And for ever after, he is forced to assume shapes that are sort of more terrifying or ugly or not appealing to the eye. But we don't get a lot about what that looks like. And the whole burning eye thing is used as a metaphor in the books that, you know, no one ever actually says like, well, actually, yes, he is a giant burning eyeball sitting atop Barad-dûr, but
right,
rather
it's Frodo
the burning
sees
eyes
the burning
used to describe
eye, right?
The effect that he has on people. They feel like that they're being, you know, peered into their soul and that he's always watching. So we don't really have a very good idea about what he'll look like.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was Frodo who kind of, when he looked into the mirror of Galadriel, saw this mm-hmm. eye, this fiery eye, and then later on, when they're at Barad-dûr, they hardly see, they see it just very, very briefly, and that's it. But yeah, you're right, there's not a very clear description.
It's whenever people are talking about his form as an eye, they're talking about how they see him in their minds, essentially, yeah. sort of
but
the impact that he has on them. So we don't know a lot about – we don't know, for example, in the major battle where he lost the ring, where Isildur cut it off his hand. We don't know, for example, what did he look like then? What was his form? Was he actually the black suit of armor running around like he is in the film? We don't get a ton of information, at least in the books proper. I think – if we went and probably mined the some of the apocryphal material and the particularly the history of Middle Earth, we'd probably find a little bit more there. And I kind of wonder if in the history of the Hobbit books, if maybe Tolkien describes a little bit how he would have transitioned, you know, if he had managed to do these sort of later revisions of The Hobbit into more Lord of the Rings epic style. I wonder if he would have described a little bit about his plans for the Necromancer, but I haven't read those.
Yeah, I should look into that. I'm thinking from the perspective of Peter Jackson, if he wants to make clear to the audience that the flaming eye that we see in the Lord of the Rings trilogy is the same person or the same evil Sauron as the Necromancer, there's got to be some kind of almost a visual reference to that or some kind of a reveal. Because I imagine that they won't make it, you know, he won't be introduced like this. I'm Sauron. I'm this big flaming eye that you all know from Lord of the Rings. It's probably going to be much more mysterious and kind of hinted at. And then all of a sudden we start to realize, oh, wait a second, this is the evil dude from the Lord of the Rings. So I wonder if there's going to be some kind of a gradual reveal and exactly how he's going to do that. I have no idea. But
I wonder. So one thing to consider is that until Gandalf confirms the identity of the Necromancer, there's several of the wise and members of the White Council suspect that he might be one of the Ringwraiths. And so one possibility is that they'll go for a costume design that is reminiscent of the Ringwraiths, or maybe specifically the Witch Kings, so some kind of dark cloak with sort of an iron crown type thing. I'm kind
That's
of guessing
one.
That they're going to make him humanoid in shape. They're not going to do the burning eye just yet.
Well, and I think what Benedict Cumberbatch says and confirms that in that they did motion capture.
Mocap, yeah.
So it doesn't make sense to do motion capture if you're just going to be this big eye. There's not much to act there. And even the voice has to be different because in Lord of the Rings, I think the eye was only speaking in the ancient, was it the ring speak or... the dark speak, or how was that called?
The black speech.
The black speech, there you go. Mm-hmm. Whereas if they want to use Cumberbatch this time, then he, yeah, I think it makes sense that he's more humanoid and then he will actually be able to talk in regular Middle Earth language. And mm-hmm. that perhaps towards the end in the second movie, there might be some kind of a transition or a vision or something like that that will reveal to us as an audience that this is Sauron.
Yes, yes. Well, so when Gandalf departs from the dwarves during The Hobbit, it's to go take care of this business with the necromancer. And so I suspect that we're actually going to see the major confrontation between the White Council and the necromancer in Mirkwood. Right around, I mean, it should be happening around the same time that the dwarves are encountering Smaug, because by the time that Smaug is dead and mm-hmm. there's about to be this major confrontation at the Lonely Mountain, Gandalf's returned. So the necromancer has to be defeated and driven out of Mirkwood, at least probably like 2/3 of the way through the second movie. And so, and we're told that that ultimately they didn't actually defeat Sauron. That this was a feint. That he basically was ready for them, and he just he wanted to go to Mordor anyway. So he just withdrew from Mirkwood and allowed them to think that he'd been beaten. And he just goes to Mordor and then sets himself up there. So I bet by the end of the second film, we will get to see a glimpse of Sauron, the Burning Eye, atop Barad-dûr.
Yeah, makes total sense. I think they need to do that, and mm-hmm. it's a bit reminiscent of the Star Wars six movies where we, mm-hmm. in the existing three we see Darth Vader, and then we get to see actually what led up to this evil character.
I'd rather suspect we'll get a very sort of ominous type Revenge of the Sith type ending, although hopefully it won't be quite so hokey.
Yeah, and hopefully he's not going to yell like no. Okay, with that obligatory Star Wars reference out of the way, what else happened these past few weeks in the world of Middle Earth and Tolkien? I heard that there was a bit of a problem around a pub that was called after The Hobbit, and now they seem to be in legal trouble with the Tolkien estate?
Yeah. Well, it's with the Saul Zentz company. The different players that take place in these kinds of scenarios are weird. So basically, there's this pub called The Hobbit, which is in Southampton in England, and it's been around for decades, by the way. This isn't somebody that just decided to open a restaurant and cash in on The Hobbit. Like, they've had it for 20 years, I think. If you read through like the comments on the articles and on the Facebook page and on Twitter, people are talking about grabbing drinks there while they were in school and all kinds of stuff. Huh. But anyway, the Tolkien estate is the heirs of Tolkien, and they own sort of the main copyright for all of Tolkien's stuff.
Right.
But they've leased out various kinds of rights to the Saul Zentz company, who has a subsidiary called Middle Earth Enterprises. Mm-hmm. And in particular, they own the worldwide rights for The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings film stuff.
Right.
I believe that the Tolkien estate actually continues to own the rights for all literary Tolkien works. Go ahead.
Is the word Hobbit itself a trademark or copyright protected?
No, I don't think. And I don't think you can trademark something like that. Mm. It's kind of ridiculous. Yeah, same thing with like Middle Earth. You know, I mean, it's not a word that Tolkien actually invented. It's a word coming out of like Norse mythology. So I don't know if you could even trademark it.
Yeah.
But the Saul Zentz company and Middle Earth Enterprises specifically are notoriously litigious on things like this. And they have a real habit of going after just kind of really trivial things. Going after people like this where it's like, why are you doing this? These people are in no way impacting your bottom line.
Right.
The, revenue that the Salzenz company makes off of this is by leasing it to New Line Cinema and Warner Brothers to make video games and movies. But so who cares about a stupid restaurant?
Well, could this be one of those situations where if they don't defend their trademark, that's going to set them up for more, you know, bigger legal problems. That if there's a precedent with this pub or restaurant, then you know, and they don't go and protect their rights, then a commercial company could take the name as well and go ahead and exploit it in a bigger way.
I suspect that must be their calculus about it. I will say I've heard. I know a little bit about this because Middle Earth Network had to research into this a bit before it launched, and we chose that name. And what we found, we talked to a copyright lawyer for a while, and what we found was that the Middle Earth Enterprises has a long history of suing people like this, travel agencies called Middle Earth Travel and retail shops and stuff, and that at least within the United States, they actually lose most of the time.
Okay.
They typically do not win because usually what the court's rules, like, you can't own a word, and you can't stop other people from using it. And if they're using maybe likenesses from the film and it's obvious that they're trying to cash in on that, then maybe. But if they're just using a word or a name, and it's specifically not names that were invented by Tolkien, you know, but they're sort of words that he's taken and given new meaning to. Usually you can't stop people from doing that.
The danger, of course, for this restaurant is that the legal costs alone just to go through this process and the time that it will cost is it could potentially harm them or benefit them if there's this big movement of everybody wants to go there and have a drink to save the pub. That might benefit them, but
they're kind of in a rock and a hard place, right?
It's
because
scary.
Rebranding rebranding the pub is going to really hurt them. But at the same time, fighting this, I'm sure Middle Earth Enterprises could really drag it on for a long time. And this lady, the landlady, whose name is Stella Mary Roberts, rack up all kinds of legal costs. So it's really unfortunate. Although I think bad publicity for Salzenz and for Middle Earth Enterprises could be sort of the wild card here, that maybe if it just gets bad enough for them, they'll kind of decide, okay, never mind.
And they've got Stephen Fry, who of course is one of the actors in The Hobbit, who also is defending this pub to keep its name. So that's huge publicity for them and bad publicity again.
Yeah,
for,
he specifically, let's see, what did he tweet? He tweeted out about it, and he said, honestly, and he was tweeting at Save the Hobbit, which is the Twitter account for trying to save the pub. He tweeted out and said, sometimes I'm ashamed of the business I'm in. What pointless self-defeating bullying.
I agree. It's orc behavior.
Yes, it's very orcish.
It's unfitting for a brand that is so much, you know, about values of respect and patience and stuff. Oh boy.
Interesting to see how it plays out, and we'll monitor the situation.
Absolutely. So we got the first glimpses of Hobbit merchandising. That's early. So
on to happier news.
Are these toys or are what kind of stuff are they already publishing now?
Well, there's a Hobbit chess set, which is kind of interesting. And these are from a variety of different sort of online sites that are just putting them up for pre-order. And it looks... It looks legitimate. They're using all of the logos and imagery from the film, which seems like that if anything was going to get you sued, using that without permission would be the way to go. this would get you nailed if you were to do that. So I'm pretty sure it's legitimate, and it's just for pre-order right now. And I think it's in largely international sites and stuff. It's not mainstream yet, but there's a Hobbit chess set, which is kind of interesting, on ForbiddenPlanet.com, which I think is a collector's site. Gentle Giant Limited has a Dwalin mini bust, which is kind of interesting. It's interesting that they would have that and not, for example, a bust of, say, Bilbo or Gandalf or something like that. Mm-hmm. There's not a photo of that one. I just clicked on the link and they just have a placeholder image. And then it looks like there's a bunch of figurines from an online store called Big Bad Toy Store.
Yeah, I'm looking at that now, and that is pretty exciting because they have collector packs, and these are more, I guess, toys, just figurines. And they've got a pack with Bilbo, Thorin, Dwalin, Keeley, and Feely. Another one with Bolg and Gandalf. Who's Bolg? It's a deluxe battle pack.
Yeah, Bolg, of course, is the orc who is leading the goblin who's leading the goblin army at the Battle of Five Armies.
Oh, cool. Yeah, all right. That's awesome. So you've got Bolg on. So this seems to imply that Bolg is the kind of the leader one of the leaders, and then you've got Gandalf, who's also probably going to be more of a general during this fight.
Mm-hmm. And actually, the presence of Bolg in that is very interesting because that was, you know, that's one of the things that we were speculating about in the Riddles in the Dark game, Bolg is the son of Azog, the major orc chieftain who killed Thror and who in turn was killed by Dain at the Battle of Azor Ulbazar. So, you know, we had been speculating that maybe they might sort of conflate these two characters, Azog and Bolg, and maybe they would put Azog at the Battle of Five Armies, but it's looking like maybe it's going to be Bolg.
I guess so, yeah. And I think wasn't the question whether we would see the Battle of Azor Ulbazar. Yeah, it's an impronounceable name.
Yes.
And I think my thesis was no, we're not going to see it. They might just refer to it, but I don't think they're going to do multiple battles, especially because this would be a flashback. And I think that
was our impression too. And specifically, we thought that they would roll elements of the Battle of Azor Ulbazar into the Battle of Five Armies.
Yeah.
And so we had this sneaking suspicion that maybe they would redo the history of Azog and Bolg and maybe just have Azog show up at this battle. But
well, or,
maybe not.
Or have Bolg, you know, to take over a few of the characteristics of his father.
I mean, yes.
And just integrate a few of the things that we know from, and Peter Jackson has done this in the past, where they would just merge certain characters, and to flesh out, you know, kind of minor characters, they would just use lore and even phrases and poems, etc., that were about totally different characters and apply them to the people that we see in Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
And we've got Bilbo Baggins. We've got the another pack series that has series one has the Goblin King with Thorin. Well, that's kind of obvious. There is a figurine called Grina. I'm kind of fuzzy on who Grina is as well. Grinnah. Any idea?
I'm trying to remind myself who that might be.
Could it be one of the elves, one of the wood elves? Let me just quickly Google that. Grina. Tolkien. Let's see if
I'm wondering if that's an original character. I don't recognize the name.
I've only got one. There's an article on the OneRing.net that mentions Grina. Let me see. Okay, no, it's just that this is an article about the figurines that we're talking about, and they also noticed that there's Fumble, an orc, with Warg, Grina, and Bolg with Gandalf. So Bolg. Obvious, but Grina might be something else. It sounds like an orc, but it could be an elf as well.
Mm-hmm.
Female elf. Who knows? Toriel is also mentioned, which again seems to confirm that Toriel, again, and we're still kind of assuming that these are real toys and this is not fake, but that Toriel is going to be a character in the first movie. And at least in the first movie, because otherwise they wouldn't release a toy for it. And that makes sense. If the movie is ending with the scenes where, you know, the company is taken captive by the wood elves and Toriel is one of them and might play a role in the whole escape via the barrels, then it makes sense that she has some kind of a heroic place in the story and therefore merits her own toy. And Legolas is also in this pre-order list, which also seems to indicate that, you know, Tauriel, Legolas, these two might end up together in the same scenes. He might be just there somehow in the yep. background.
Yep, that seems highly plausible to me.
And then if you want to give your kids something to play with outside, they've got a Hobbit Deluxe Sting Sword or a Hobbit Dwarven Battle Axe. Or,
they've got a Play Sting Sword. I'm excited about those.
That is pretty cool. These are going to be the lightsabers of 2012.
That's right.
Every kid is going to have them. Very, very cool stuff. So that's about it for the toys. Let's see. Why don't we just take a short break and then we'll move over to the rest of the news.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. This is wonderful.
I meant to go back. Wander the paths of Mirkwood. Visit Lake Town. See the Lonely Mountain again. That age, it seems, has finally caught up with me.
This episode is brought to you by the Friends of SQPN. It's our core group of supporters that signed up for a monthly donation in order to help us produce more of these podcasts. And if you've ever been to our main website on sqpn.com, you will see a huge list of shows that we produce. We just added a few new ones to the lineup and... We are a nonprofit organization, and so we depend on the financial support of our listeners, of our fans, to keep doing this and to pay the bills for the bandwidth and the entire organization. And so, if you like what we do and you want to help us with it, and it's within your means, then I would invite you to consider becoming either a friend of SQPN or support us with a one-time donation. Just think about it this way. It's, you know, if you look at how many times per month you go to Starbucks and how much a cup of coffee costs, well, if you just leave that Starbucks alone for one day, it would already help us out tremendously. So anyway, just go to sqpn.com and look for the blurb on the right-hand side of the screen about Friends of SQPN. And we thank all our listeners for their support, both financial, but also in their encouragement and their reviews on iTunes and your feedback and the fact that you're still listening. We really, really appreciate it. So back to the news.
What's happening out there?
Shall I describe it to you? Or would you like me to find you a box?
Have we seen any new photos? Guys, I saw something about Gareth Eaves posting new Hobbiton photos?
Yeah, this is from Middle Earth News, but basically he's a dude who either lives in New Zealand or recently traveled there, but he's got a Flickr account entitled New Zealand 2012. Mm-hmm. And in it, he's got pictures of Hobbiton. And I think that he contacted Middle Earth News, or either Middle Earth News got a hold of him and he gave them permission to post the photos on Middle Earth News. So here's a quote from him from the article on Middle Earth News. He says, "The first time I went was 2004 and was straight after university. So I was traveling backpacking. This year I went back as my brother's out there doing the same, so we were visiting him. While there, I took the opportunity to visit a few places I've been previously, and of course Hobbiton was one of those places. Out of interest, on the 2004 trip, I did do a few other Lord of the Rings tours at other locations. Hobbiton is the most obvious and the one that still appears as it does in the movies." And so there's a series of photos on the if you go to his Flickr account, it's got mm-hmm. way more photos from New Zealand.
Yes.
If you go to the Middle Earth News page, you'll see just the photos he took of Lord of the Rings locations. The first 11 photos are from his 2004 visit, and the remainder are from when he went back in 2012. So
I'm browsing through the Hobbiton photos or the Matamata photos on his Flickr account, and they are absolutely stunning. This must have been mm-hmm. after they wrapped up filming, I guess.
And it has to be, right?
This is probably what any tourist will see in the future when you go and visit this location. And it's completely devoid of any trucks or production stuff or lamps, but everything is still there. And You know, having been there a couple of years ago, and I'm looking at there's a big overview photo where you see the party tree, you see the lake, and then you see the Green Dragon Inn, the bridge, and everything, and then even some extra hobbit holes that weren't there when I visited, just in the vicinity of the party tree. It looks glorious and really, really upgraded from last time I was there. There's much more. There are many more little trees and fruit trees and everything. And the party tree itself also looks a lot healthier than when I visited. So they started this whole save the party tree thing because it was in very bad shape after a few big storms. And but it seems that has worked, and it looks really, really nice now. So definitely, if you want to get a taste of Hobbiton, the way it will look in the future from now on, go check out that Flickr account. I'll post a link in the show notes.
It's pretty gorgeous, isn't it? It's really exciting. I love that the Tuckborough sign is
yes,
awesome.
And then did you notice the beehives that are in the foreground of the big hill with actually Bilbo's house? Mm-hmm. There are three beehives sitting there. I don't think that these are real beehives, but it's still pretty cool. those weren't there. And they just,
how about the stack of firewood out in front of the house with the red door?
Absolutely. And the signs are great. And the signs look as if they've been there forever. They're overgrown a little bit, and some mushrooms, and it looks totally real. And you wouldn't think of this as a set anymore. Whereas in the past when you visited, because of the fact that they didn't leave any of the original props, you could still totally recognize the area, but you would constantly be taken out of the illusion by the fact that all these facades of the hobbit holes were just in white wood. And I don't think they even were allowed to use something that would resemble what we saw in the movie. But now mm-hmm. this is the best destination ever for hobbit fans. And now I absolutely want to go back. Just make sure that if you go there when it's springtime, because this is clearly taken on a very sunny day. The skies are blue, all the flowers are in bloom, and it's a very different atmosphere than if you're visiting this in the middle of winter when it's all gray and dreary.
Yeah, I'll bet. Boy, and I'll tell you what, just looking at the rest of his photos, just New Zealand in general is beautiful.
Oh, it is. I mean,
I love the pictures of the dolphins. I love aquatic mammals.
just looking at that production video, I was like, I want to go there. I want to live there. What am I doing in Holland?
Yeah, I have a friend who picked up and moved there about 6 months ago.
I should so do that. Unfortunately, I can't. But it's high on my list of future destinations. It's worth it. Let's see, what else have we got in the news? Some smaller news. Sean Austin is apparently running a marathon.
Yeah, he's going to run in the LA Marathon this weekend, actually.
I didn't think he had it in him. I mean, I've just saw him in a... Yeah. Oh, he was in the videos, actually, for the game. You know, what was it again? Mm-hmm. This big Xbox PS3 game that you tested?
The War in the North.
Yeah. And just looking at that interview, I was like, wow, you've got a lot to carry around there if you're going to run a marathon.
Yes, I was thinking the same thing. I saw him in person, and he didn't look like he'd been really doing some serious marathon training at that point, but I'm sure he's been training since then.
I hope so. And let's see. Well, the genealogy project that's in the show notes, I already mentioned that briefly in, I think, two shows ago.
Going back to the Sean Astin thing, we should give him a plug. He's got a website about his marathon thing. It's called runthird.com. And it's about dedicating his run to other people. And he's trying to sort of convince other people to do the same kind of thing. Like, you know, do a road race, train, and then dedicate it to other people in addition to yourself.
That's
the third thing.
What
are his three things? The three things are, first, I run for me. Second, I run for my family. Third, I run for you. So...
Nice.
It's cool. Go check it out. Run third, RUN3RD.com.
Right, exactly. And there was another kind of charity related thing. What's this Pens Against Poverty?
Yeah, it's a charity in New Zealand called, I believe, the Child Fund. And this is related to Child Fund New Zealand's Young Playwrights Challenge. And basically what they've done is they've set up their judging panel, which includes a bunch of folks who are working on The Hobbit right now. They have John Callan, currently based in Wellington, working on The Hobbit. He's a respected actor and director. I've got to look up what these people are actually doing in the film. Mark Hadlow, also in The Hobbit. And then a few other folks. And basically, I think the goal is to raise money to support childhood education in the arts, and specifically in like screenplay writing and literature and that sort of stuff.
Yeah. John Callan, by the way, is Oin. He's one of the dwarves.
It's one of the dwarves. That's right.
Let me look up Mark Hadlow. Yeah, I'm still doing my best to try to memorize all these names, but there's so many of them. Mark Hadlow is Dory. And let's see, there was another one. Galvin. No, Galvin is just a local actor. He's not in The Hobbit, right?
Yeah, okay, I think you're
cool.
Right.
Very cool.
And let me correct. I think it's just more of a general. So Child Fund, is a member of the Child Fund Alliance. It's a child development organization. They work just for. They do general, not just screenplay, not education, but general poverty initiatives, health, education, nutrition, livelihood. But what this competition is, which is pretty neat, is it's a screenplay competition for. I think sort of teenagers in New Zealand, and they submit their screenplays, and the winning script will be transformed into a play performed by professional actors in December, which is pretty cool.
Very nice.
So it's the Hobbit people keep giving back to New Zealand, which is wonderful.
I think that's always been kind of part of the atmosphere there, and it's again something that you see in the most recent production video. This camaraderie. This is very different from. Kind of the style that you sometimes see around certain big budget productions, where it's all about, you know, it's like money, it's very tight schedules, and it's like I can tell that these actors are having such a blast. They're just enjoying this. It's almost like a privilege for them to work in this movie, and then even to make some money with it. Ian McCallum at one point is interviewed during the production video and is like, yeah, don't think that this is a punishment for us to be here. It's not. don't pity us.
They're not working. They're just having fun.
Yes. Well, they're working a little bit, I suppose. But it's I think, and I'm glad, because that's probably what this movie needs, what this story needs. After all, let's remind ourselves this is a children's tale, and it's cheerful. And there are some dark moments, but it's nothing compared to the darkness later on in Lord of the Rings. And so just seeing how much these actors enjoy them, especially the dwarves. I mean, these guys are just as funny when they're not acting as if they are. And in fact, I've seen more fun kind of when they're off duty. And it's already hilarious, let alone if they're, you know, just totally in character and playing these dwarves. I think it's going to be a much more humorous set of movies than what we know from Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's we're approaching the end of our episode, and of course we want to play our game, or at least give our contribution to the overall Hobbit guessing game. What's the official name again of this quiz?
It's called Riddles in the Dark.
Riddles in the Dark. So
right.
What are the hypotheses that we need to say something about?
Apparently, while I was on vacation, you did make your prediction for question number three.
Yeah, I did the battle of the something.
Good. Okay. Good. I'm gonna go listen to that. The next one that we released last week, which was pre-recorded, is about Thorin Oakenshield. The episode 4 of the Riddles in the Dark podcast was focused on Thorin Oakenshield, And specifically, the prediction was about how he will end up in the Elven King's dungeon. And let me explain why we're speculating on this. So in the book, when the dwarves get lost in Mirkwood, and they're enchanted by this mysterious light and party of elves that they keep seeing, and then it disappears when they run in there. At some point, they look up and they realize, Thorin, where is he? He's gone. He's missing. And they go looking for him, and that's when they end up becoming trapped by the spiders, and then Bilbo has to rescue them. And after they finally do escape from the spiders, then they get captured by the elves, and they get taken down to the Thranduil's realm in Mirkwood and thrown in the Elven King's dungeon. And at some point, that's when they figure out, oh, Thorin's already here. He's actually already been imprisoned. And so he's actually captured by the elves before the other dwarves are, and he's not present at the scene, the battle with the spiders.
Right.
One of the things when we were talking about Thorin, we were talking about his characterization and sort of how the screenwriters for the films are going to design his story arc, and how they're going to build in some character development, what kind of dramatic tension they might add for him. And Corey hypothesized that he thinks one of the major elements of the film, not major, but one of the story or one of the character elements of the film connected to Bilbo's growth as a hero will be a rivalry with Thorin. You see a little bit of this in the book. It's not played up a lot, but you do see that as the story goes on, the dwarves start looking to Bilbo to be their leader. They start counting on him to make decisions, him to get them out of scrapes. Mm-hmm. And so he kind of becomes the unofficial leader of the company, even though Thorin is the sort of the official leader.
And if I may interrupt, there's also a bit of a hint in the trailer, the official trailer, where Thorin Oakenshield is talking to Gandalf, and he's like, I'm not going to protect this hobbit, or he seems to be kind of like his. You can tell that his opinion of Bilbo is not very high. You know, it's like, I don't want to get into trouble because of this hobbit, and so that would certainly jive with this idea of that Bilbo will get stronger and stronger, and thereby Thorin will have to revise his opinion of him.
Yeah, he's very resentful about having to take him initially. He sort of begrudgingly starts to accept him and accept that he's good for stuff, but he still sort of treats him with contempt when he sends him down into the Lonely Mountain to steal the one-off cup. And then at the end, of course, after Bilbo steals the Arkenstone, he is just livid, and he threatens to chuck Bilbo off the mountain, but for probably his promise to Gandalf that he wouldn't hurt him or anything. So we think there's going to be some interesting character stuff going on there. And so Corey speculated that he thinks that one way the filmmakers might play this up a bit is rather than have Thorin be captured by the elves before the spider scene, that they'll actually keep him present for the spider scene and actually have Bilbo rescue Thorin from the spiders. And so this would be a good sort of first dramatic moment where Thorin realizes that Bilbo is saving him, and that Bilbo's kind of becoming a hero, and he'll be sort of indebted to him. Plant the sort of the resentment and the grudge there. So that's the question. The question is, how will Thorin end up in the Elven King's dungeon? And in our choices that we came up with were, just as in the book, he'll be taken by the elves prior to the spider conflict. B is he will be captured with the rest of them after the spider fight, so they won't be separated. And C is neither of the above. We couldn't come up with any other good options. So Corey, of course, the question was his idea, and he went with B. He thinks that Thorin's going to be present at the spider fight. I went with A, just because we always have to disagree.
So what was A again?
A was that they'll do it the way it's done in the book, that he'll be taken by the elves prior to the spider conflict. So he'll just disappear.
I as much as I love this idea of Bilbo saving Thorin, I do believe that there would be another option, and that is that Bilbo will say, will you know, be very brave and clearly, you know, play an important role during the battle with the spiders. But Thorne will miss out on that. And then later on, when they, you know, he's kind of the the anti-hero here. He's just captured and nothing glorious, no real fight, which is a bit humiliating later on when he hears about, you know, the exploits of Bilbo and how there was this tremendous fight and he was just sitting there not being able to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
that's my take on it as well.
That's kind of how I think it will play out. And, you know, I was thinking of Thorin almost, including in the way he looks, he makes me think of the in Star Trek, these Klingons. So he looks a bit like a big Klingon. And for a Klingon, there's nothing worse than to be captured without a fight, you know? It's like...
Yeah, missing out on the fight.
So I'm thinking if they go with that kind of characterization, then it would be very humiliating for him to actually have been captured just stupidly by the elves, and then
that was my take too. I was thinking that it's a neat idea, and I like this idea of tension between the two characters, but I don't think the spider battle is necessary to create it. I think they can do it other places. So
I agree. What
do you think about that? This idea of this kind of character arc for Thorne and Bilbo.
Well, I like it, and I think that you need to have a certain tension within the company, and Thorne. Especially because we know that in the, you know, when with the Arkenstone, he's going to get very mad at Bilbo. There must be kind of a prelude to that. So I think there will be an ongoing tension and rivalry between the two, and probably felt more by Thorin than by Bilbo. I think Bilbo is just not really, you know, he's not that ambitious. He's kind of the accidental hero in a way. So, but I never thought about that. You need Thorin to be kind of a bit of a controversial dwarf there. Why doesn't he like Bilbo? And we might see some reasons why not.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, this process of really going in depth on analyzing how they might execute the films and asking these hard questions about how to do it is very cathartic. I'm going to be very well prepared emotionally for major changes to the films, and I don't think I'll react as violently as I did with the Lord of the Rings. Like the Battle of Azanulbazar, just talking it through with Corey and then hearing the predictions that our other analysts made, I just came out of it thinking, it can't be in there. Much as I love it, I know it absolutely won't work, and I've accepted it.
it's great, and I love this game because it makes you think about all the possibilities, and you could never play this game after the movies come out. You know, it's over with all the speculation. There won't be another incarnation of the Hobbit anytime soon. Perhaps in a video game, but certainly not as a movie. So. Yeah, just get it while it's here. And so where can people go to listen to the previous and future episodes of this game quiz?
Well, they all get released on the Tolkien Professor iTunes feed. So everything that he does, he just releases on the one feed.
And there's also a grid, right? Some kind of a spreadsheet where we can see all the predictions.
If you go to Mythgard.org, I believe it's /exclusives/riddles-in-the-dark with dashes separating those words that you'll find it there. But if you just go to Mythgard.org and click on exclusives, you'll be able to find it. And so that's where we're doing blog posts about when we release episodes. That's where you can find this grid with everyone's predictions, including mine and including yours, Father Roderick, and some other online Tolkien celebrities. And it's pretty exciting.
And of course, we'll include the link to that in our show notes on thehobbit.sqpn.com. It's time to wrap up this episode. We'll be back soon with more news from New Zealand and more news about the movies and perhaps some more speculation. Hope you enjoyed this show. Thanks for listening. Write a review on iTunes if you have some time, and let your fellow Hobbit friends know about this podcast. Thanks in advance, and see you soon in Middle Earth.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.